Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari.
Jaya Radha Madhava
Kunjabi. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Kunjabi Hari. Gopi Jana Banabha Girivara Dhari. 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 Jasoda Nandana Braja Janarandana. Jasoda Nandana Braja Janarandana. Braja Janarandana. Jamuna Tiravana Chadi. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Gopi Jana Balabha Girivara Dhari. Gopi Jana Balabha Girivara Dhari. Gopi Jana Balabha Girivara Dhari. Gopi Jana Balabha. Jasoda Nandana Braja Janarandana. Jasoda Nandana Braja Janarandana. Braja Janarandana. Jamuna Tira Banachari. Jamuna Tira Banachadi. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Madhava Kunjabi. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari.
Jaya Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivida Gacharja Astatara Sita Sisi Mad His Divine Grace Sisi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Shira Prabhupada Kid Ananta Kuti Vaishnavrinda Kid Grantarad Srimad Bhagavatam Kid Gaur Pimanandi.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Text 29.
Ya ekavarnam tamasak param tad alokam avyaktam ananta param asam chikaro pasuparnam enam upasate yogaratena dhiraha Ya ekavarnam tamasak param tad. Alokam avyaktam anantaparam. Asam chakaro pasum parnam enam. Upasate yoga ratena diraha. Avokam avyaktam anantaparam. Kavarnam tamasak param tad. Alokam avyaktam ananta param. Asam chakaro pasamana enam. Upasate yoga ratena diraha. Ya ekavarnam tamasak param tat. Alokam avyaktam ananta param. Asam chakaro pasum parnam enam. Upasate yoga ratena diraha. Ya ekavarnam tamasak param tat. Alokam avyaktam anantaparam. Asam chakaro pasuparnam enam. Apasate yoga ratena diraha yaha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead who? Ekavarnam, absolute, situated in pure goodness. Tamasaha, to the darkness of the material world. Param, transcendental. Tat, that. Alokam, who cannot be seen. Avyaktam, not manifested. Anantaparam, unlimited, beyond the measurement of time and space. Asam chakara, situated. Upa suparnam, on the back of Garuda. Enam, him. Upasate, worship. Yoga ratena, by the vehicle of mystic yoga. Diraha, persons who are sober, undisturbed by material agitation. Translation, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated in pure goodness, Shuddha-sattva, and therefore he is Eka-varna, dash, the Omkara, or Pranava. Because the Lord is beyond the cosmic manifestation, which is considered to be darkness, he is not visible to material eyes. Nonetheless, he is not separated from us by time or space, but is present everywhere. Situated on his carrier, Garuda, he is worshipped by means of mystical, yogic power by those who have achieved freedom from agitation. Let us all offer our respectful obeisances unto him. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Sattvam Vishuddham Vasudeva Shabditam. Bhagavatam 4.3.23. In this material world, the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance prevail. Among these three, goodness is the platform of knowledge, and passion brings about a mixture of knowledge and ignorance, but in the mode of ignorance is full of darkness. Therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is beyond darkness and passion. He is on the platform of where goodness or knowledge is not disturbed by passion and ignorance. This is called the Vasudeva platform. It is on this platform that Vasudeva or Krishna can appear. Thus Krishna appeared on this planet as the son of Vasudeva. Because the Lord is situated beyond the three modes of material nature, he is unseen by those who are dominated by these three modes. One must therefore become dhira, or undisturbed by the modes of material nature. The process of yoga may be practiced by one who is free from the agitation of these modes. Therefore, yoga is defined in this way, : yoga indriya samyamaha. As previously explained, we are disturbed by the indriyas or senses. Moreover, we are agitated by the three modes of material nature, which are imposed upon us by the external energy. In conditional life, the living entity moves turbulently in the whirlpool of birth and death. But when one is situated on the transcendental platform of Vishuddha Sattva, pure goodness, he can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who sits on the back of Garuda. Lord Brahma offers his respectful obeisances unto that Supreme Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam is so nice. Prabhupada has described that this term Krishna Katha can mean either topics spoken by Krishna or topics spoken about Krishna. And either way, they're transcendental. And just on the topic of transcendental is a word that gets used so much we kind of don't really pay attention to what the implication of the word transcendental means. At least I'm accustomed to that. I was thinking, sharing this with you, from the time I left just after the Festival of the Holy Name, being in China, they don't have deities, they don't have temples, don't wear dhotis, don't have tilak, they have neck beads. But
the facilities that we have, we just take for granted. Certainly there was a time when, in the West, temples didn't exist. And who knows, who can count the number of hours and the ounces of sacrifice that have been made to establish temples and establish the deities and maintain them over so many years and years and years and years and years and so forth and so on. And it's real easy to take it for granted. So I was thinking the morning after I came here attending Mangalarti, what an opulence to attend Mangalarti. Wow. Just a comment. We're spoiled in one sense. We don't have to be, but there's a tendency that because we receive things so easily, we're spoiled. We don't really take it seriously or cherish it, value it, etc. Anyway, we're kindness of Krishna is abundant. So this word transcendental, the first time I was introduced to the word transcendental was through some American and British poets who read Bhagavad Gita, and you know it's in the back cover, at least it was for a long time. Emerson and Thoreau were considered transcendentalists. In part, they read Bhagavad Gita and they revered Bhagavad Gita. But what does it mean, transcendental? It's being pointed to in the words of the verse as well as in the purport. That which you cannot, as long as one is influenced by the modes of nature, and that's everybody, as long as one is influenced by the modes of nature, you cannot perceive transcendence. Transcendence, say it conversely, transcendence is beyond the touch of the modes of nature or karma. Guna and karma do not touch transcendence. So what is it? Well, you can say what it isn't. It's not this. It's not that. Okay, what is it? Well, you can know what it is by sound, by transcendental sound. And even if you hear transcendental sound, one who is influenced by the modes of nature isn't going to detect what's that sound. What's, you know, the, just like abhinnatvam nama namino, the non-difference between the name and the person named. Nama and nami is Krishna, and Krishna are non-different. That's really like one of our basic things in terms of our teachings, and it's one of the essential elements to meditate upon or have experience of when chanting the holy name, because the name of Krishna is transcendental and it acts like a chintamani, a touchstone that transforms base metal into gold. This purport, the verse that is being referred to at the beginning of the purport, Satvam Vishuddham Vasudeva Shabditam, first line of the purport, Canto 4, Chapter 3, Text 23. This is a discussion between Lord Shiva and Parvati. And Lord Shiva is describing upon whom he meditates. He meditates on Vasudeva. He meditates on Vasudeva, who is Vasudeva Shabditam. Vasudeva Shabditam is beyond the modes of nature. The Vasudeva state, as it's described in the purport here, the Vasudeva state is transcendence, beyond the modes of nature. And it's from that beyond the modes of nature state that Krishna appears. And thus, the father of Krishna is Vasudeva, and Vasudeva becomes the father of Vasudeva, Krishna. Because one needs to be in transcendence in order to see, realize, experience Vasudeva, Krishna. You with me? That's spoken by Parvati, by Lord Shiva to Parvati. And Prabhupada gives this wonderful example. Three parts. First he starts with electricity. So there's copper wire, and you run electricity through the copper wire, and no longer acts like copper wire, it acts like electricity. It's electricity. Although it's not electricity, it's a copper wire. Or another example, number two, the iron rod in fire. The iron rod is iron, but put it in fire, and it's acting like iron is no longer, it acts like fire. You touch it to something that will burn, that something burns. It becomes fire. And third, similarly, when the mind becomes absorbed in thoughts of Vasudeva, Krishna, the mind enters into this Vasudeva, beyond modes of nature, or transcendental position, and Krishna appears in the mind. Krishna appears in the mind, or Krishna appears in the heart. Krishna is already there. Krishna is everywhere, and that's what's being stated. He's everywhere, just like Hiranyakashipu asked Prahlad, where is this Vishnu? And he said, he's everywhere. He's everywhere. He's very near. He's the nearest thing to anything because he's everywhere. But he's very far away. He's very far away in the sense, just like this second line of the verse, alokam avyaktam anantaparam. Alokam cannot be seen. Avyaktam, not manifested. Anantaparam, unlimited beyond the measurement of material time and space. It doesn't happen so much today, but it happened a lot during Prabhupada's time. I think it's had something to do with the time, not the person. People were challenging spirit, so they would ask Prabhupada on several occasions, have you seen God or can you show me God? Can you show me God? Do you have the eyes to see him? I can show him to you. Do you have the eyes to see him? And alokyam, you cannot see him unless you're in this Vasudeva state or beyond the modes of nature state. Avyaktam, there's vyakta and avyakta, manifest, unmanifest. He's not manifested. But one who becomes Krishna conscious, he becomes manifested. Vasudeva appears from Vasudeva. So the sadhana of the bhakti process is doing exactly what we're doing right now and what we do throughout our whole morning program. And that is, we engage ourselves in hearing sound vibrations that are transcendental. The sound vibration is, our consciousness may not be, but the sound vibration is. And by regular practice, this is now Patanjali, who has written the Patanjali Yoga Sutras, describes sadhana or abhyasa. The practice has three parts. Three elements must be there, otherwise it doesn't constitute sadhana or practice. It's regular, extended over time, and with the conviction or faith that this will take you to transcendence. It requires transcendental faith, that the sound vibration of Krishna's name or the sound vibration of Srimad Bhagavatam will carry you to Krishna. It will awaken consciousness of Krishna just by hearing. There's some cleansing that's going on, but also removing misconceptions and so forth, material attachments, instead having Krishna attachment that's wanted through the process of hearing. But Krishna emerges. Krishna appears in the pages of the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada writes, in every line of the Bhagavatam, Krishna appears. You know, it depends on your consciousness, whether Krishna appears or doesn't appear. What you see or what you don't see. Avyaktam, manifest, not manifest. Then this, the third term, ananta param, cannot be measured by time and space. So he's very far away, he's very near as well. Very far away and very near as well. And it's not a contradiction, because he's both simultaneously. It's just, it's part of Krishna's nature. He has inconceivable potencies. He can be simultaneously, not alternatively back and forth, but simultaneously bigger than the biggest and smaller than the smallest. We can't be either one. But he can be both at the same time. No problem. No problem. In the pastime of Dhruva, one of the beautiful details of that pastime is when Dhruva is in intense absorbed meditation upon Lord Vishnu, because his motivation was he wanted a kingdom. He wanted a big kingdom. So Vishnu can give you whatever you want. So he was meditating on Vishnu according to Narada's instruction. And he was in trance. So the demigods, because his life air was suspended, it was checking the movement of air throughout the whole of the universe. The demigods were choking. They went to Lord Vishnu's abode. Lord Vishnu's abode. Swetadweep, that planet in the sky that's not destroyed when the sky is destroyed. They went there. They offered prayers. He said, don't worry. It's just a little boy. I'll go soon and take care of the problem. You go back to your heavenly planets. Everything will be nice. That same Lord Vishnu descended and appeared before Dhruva. That same Lord Vishnu that descended and appeared before Dhruva was the same Lord Vishnu who was in the heart of Dhruva. He's very near it and very far away as well. Like, well, which one was it? Was it the one that was in his heart that appeared before him, or the one that came from the spiritual planet? Shiradakshaya Vishnu's planet, Swetadweep. Well, it's the same person. So it can be this one, that one, or this, or both of them. No problem. He's very near and very far away as well. And it's a mystery. You know, it's double talk. In one sense, from the material perspective, it's double talk. But from a transcendental perspective, it's transcendental. It's Krishna's nature. He's beyond our capacity of the mind to understand, beyond the capacity of the eyes to see, beyond, you know, it's beyond material nature, beyond the modes of nature. That's what Brahma is saying. Let us worship him. My dear demigods, you're in difficulty. You want help. Let's worship him. You'll get everything. And there's a sadhana to that. The sadhana is, even if you're
under the modes of nature here anyway, here regularly, and here with rapt attention as much as you can. Practice like that. That's the sadhana. And eventually, through sufficient purification, then the mind becomes gradually, at least the potential is there, to become gradually more and more and more and more situated in transcendence and attached to transcendence. That's the Vasudeva state. Then Vasudeva appears. Krishna becomes fixed up in the heart. Nashtaprayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttamashloke bhaktir bhavati. I like the word bhavati. Bhavati means voila. It just appears. Bhakti bhavati. Bhakti bhavati. It becomes manifest. It's there, just becomes manifest. And when bhakti becomes manifest, Krishna is attracted, Krishna appears. Our sadhana practices are not simply behaviors. Our sadhana practices are awakening that spirit of attraction for transcendence. Just like your question yesterday, you know, what's the way that we should read Srimad Bhagavatam? We should read with the spirit that I want to know. The inquisitiveness, jigyasu. So it begins that way. And then Krishna's kind, he sends spiritual sound vibrations that disclose him. It's just like the first part of chapter 10 of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna begins, most of the chapters begin with a question, and Krishna responds to Arjuna's question. Chapter 10, there's no question at the beginning. He's just continuing from where he left off in chapter 9. In the end of chapter 9, he's describing the topmost manana bhava mad bhakto mad yaji mam namaskuru. It's the essence verse of, or one of the essence verses of the Bhagavad Gita. So he says, always think of me. Now, how are you supposed to think of him? Well, Krishna says, very simple, nobody knows what existed before you existed. Because it existed before you existed. You don't know. You can guess. You can fake it. Definitely what existed before we existed was a Big Bang. And after the Big Bang, then we existed. That's what existed before we existed. So you can bluff. You can perhaps, maybe. But Krishna says you can't know. So you can't know by the power of speculation, then how can you know? You can know if that which existed before you existed discloses. I existed before you existed. That's how you can know. And there's certainly some element of faith. There's an element of faith of, I don't know, but I'm speculating what existed before existed. You call it science. So faith is in the Vedas, because the Vedas are like the mother who discloses who is the father. And if you don't have faith in your mother, you're not going to know who your father is. If your mother lies, you're not going to know. You're not going to know. Fortunately, the Vedas don't lie. The Vedas disclose who the father is. So Krishna is in the 10th chapter disclosing what existed before we existed. Aham. I existed before you. I'm the source of everything. Not only you. Everything comes from me. Iti mat vapa jante mam. Thus knowing one engages in my devotional service.
Brahma is helping the demigods remember what they have forgotten. I mean, they're devotees, but they're in anxiety, and so sometimes when we're in anxiety, we forget what we know. He's reminding them. And he's in perfect knowledge, Brahma. He knows transcendence. We know that from Brahma Samhita. He practiced his sadhana. He entered into the realm of transcendence, became well acquainted with the ocean of truth, and disclosed it. He disclosed all the Vedas. Now he's reminding the demigods what they have forgotten. And essentially, that's what the Bhagavatam is doing also. We've forgotten Krishna. So the different aspects or features of Krishna, the source of everything, is being expressed in the verses of the Bhagavatam here, specifically expressed by Lord Brahma. He's situated in transcendence. Let us worship him. Let us fix our consciousness upon him. Then everything will be all right. Okay, any discussion? I'm ending class early because our discussions usually goes a long time. Oh, okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. At the end of the class, you made a statement that our sadhana practices is not just a behavioral thing, but yeah. Eventually helps us to come to the stage of transcendence.
Yeah.
Last week, we had TSI gathering here in Chicago.
You had what?
TSI.
TSI, the Sangha. Yeah, right.
It was there last weekend here, and I did a session with the young, with the men separately and the women separately.
You didn't do what?
I did a session.
You did a session, okay.
With both the men and the women, but okay. It was two different sessions separate.
Okay.
What came up in the women's session is that at least my understanding was in their discussions, is the emphasis on to conform to the behavior part, almost to the extent that they feel alienated, judged, because they're not conforming to the behavior. And I asked them to share some examples, which they did. And I can understand that it's kind of little harsh because the essence sometimes is forgotten by the older devotees, especially parents. And so how do you, when the challenge for me was these kind of discussion with the young people in Chicago, it's easy for me to have, but somehow I had to, how to support or how to make them explain this point that it's not just a behavior, but actually it supports something more Krishna conscious. And
yeah.
And I think there is a lack of little maturity from those who are correcting these young people. It's not just the young people. So how do you address, if you were in a situation or asked to respond to something like this, how you would respond?
The last part you mumbled, could you say the last part again?
If
the last part.
Yes. If you were asked to respond to a question like this, how would you like to respond to something?
Form comes from essence, and the essence is the essence. So what's most important is the essence. And one who wishes the essence will accept the form because it enhances the essence. I'll give a little example. You've probably heard this one before, but I really appreciated Niranjan Maharaj sharing, we were at a japa retreat, and he was reading to us a letter that he had composed to a disciple in Ukraine, I guess, that was one of their biggest book distributors. They got some kind of illness or hospitalization for something or other, maybe it was an accident, whatever. They were in the hospital for some time and just unable to chant because of their physical condition. So they had written to him, "Good news, Guru Maharaj, I'm now able to chant 6 rounds a day, and I'm really looking forward to getting back to 16 rounds a day. My sincere apologies, but it's, you know, circumstances prevent." So his letter back was, "Don't worry about 16. I know you've taken vows of initiation, and that's important to you. But try to chant with feeling, because when you try to chant with feeling, very quickly you'll come to 16 rounds again. But if you just quickly come to 16 rounds again, you may be missing that feeling, and then it's not the same." He's not discouraging upholding the vow, nor is he just emphasizing upholding the vow. He's emphasizing the essence, because from the essence, the form will come. Now, there is a reason that we, you know, why 16? Why not, you know, 13? Or why not 18? It's because it's given by our founder, Acharya. There's potency in those things given by superior authority as part of the faith that one has who wishes the essence. It's just like the question yesterday, you weren't here, maybe you heard it remotely. The best way to read or to enter into Srimad Bhagavatam is with a desire to want to know. That, you know, that's the essence. Then, you know, the messages come through. Otherwise, you're reading for information's sake, and then it's not, the essence doesn't come through because you're not looking for the essence, looking for information. So you can decouple the behavior from the essence and say the essence is more important. When one has captured the essence, then that's to whatever degree, you know, whether the light is just a little spark, or it's a little flame, or it's a strong flame, or it's a blaze, the essence is the essence, and the form will take on corresponding to the essence and the strength of the essence. So we don't dismiss the behaviors, but it's not, the essence is not behaviors. Those that sadhana helps, practices, even when we don't want to. So like this other nice example of, we chant 16 rounds, Prabhupada said, because we must. And it's a must. And if we don't, if it's not a must, then we wouldn't. Largely. Not everyone, but largely that would be the case. Why do we chant on beads? Some people don't like chanting on beads. I just like to chant. Why do we chant on beads? Why have vidis at all? Because it helps, and we need all the help we can get. There's potency in taking the vidhis of sadhana bhakti to help us get to the essence and strengthen the essence. So we do them because of that reason. But if we just do them without that reason, we're missing the essence. Just to say that, you know, say the same thing again, that the statement in Nectar Devotion, it gives all these different rules, 64 rules of bhakti, the do's and the don'ts, then summarizes and says the essence of all of them is to remember Krishna. So if we want to always remember Krishna, we're happy to take on behaviors that help us remember Krishna. And if we're just rebellious, then we don't want anything except it feels good. And then I'll say yes. I'll chant when I feel like chanting. So we accept vidhis because they help us remember Krishna, help us get closer to the essence. You know, and when, whether that's going to appeal to an individual hearing it or not depends upon the individual. They may just be stuck in, I'm rebellious. And anything you say other than do what you want to do is going to be irritating. Depends on the individual and what they're going through at that particular time. And so I would, you know, depending on the person, I would respond differently. It's just on a one-on-one discussion, but a group discussion, there's reason for having. Help us get to the essence. Something else? Subal.
Guru Maharaj, when asking the Lord for help, and the last, in this discussion you brought it up, and in the first class also, we encouraged to actually come to the Lord and ask for help. And then we see in the narrations, with Gajendra Moksha and now with the demigods, that they in a position of distress, they approach the Lord, but they use, there's two different means, you know. Gajendra went directly.
Yes.
And the demigods goes through Lord Brahma. And it seems that Lord Brahma, you say, is reminding them.
Yes.
So there is a difference, it seems that there is a difference in Gajendra's directly approaching the Lord. And
there's a difference, he didn't have much choice. It was an urgent situation.
Yeah, right. But in terms of the methodology or the recommended, you know, we hear it's through the spiritual master that you get the mercy of the Lord. So how to, when we ask for help, you know, then how, what's the best way to ask for help for the Lord, from the Lord?
Sincerely. If the question you're asking is it better to go through a representative of Krishna asking for help, or better to go to Krishna directly for help? Is that the question you're asking? Something like that. One of Prabhupada's disciples named Saradiya told me that she had asked Prabhupada a similar question. Her question was, Prabhupada, is it okay if we pray to Krishna? Because you've taught us we shouldn't jump over the spiritual master. Should we instead pray to you, and being merciful, you'll pray to Krishna on our behalf? Or is it okay to pray directly to Krishna? Not the same, but it's similar, it sounds like. So Prabhupada's answer, he laughed and said, how can you think of Krishna without the spiritual master? How can you think of the spiritual master without Krishna? They're inseparable. That was his answer. So that is, when you go to Krishna, how do we even know about Krishna? That's, he's transcendent by the mercy of the representative of Krishna. So when we go to Krishna, we should bear in mind the connection with Krishna is through the spiritual master. It's similar to, non-different from, the worship of the deity. You approach the deity taking permission from the spiritual master. And it's in a ritual or, you know, a procedural form for brahmanas who are approaching the deity. It's part of the procedure to be followed. So aside from deity worship procedure, there's the, seems like the question you're asking. When we pray to Krishna, as Prabhupada said to Saradiya, how can you think of Krishna separately? We know what Krishna says about that. That's not my devotee. What is our qualification or eligibility? What's our adhikar to just go to Krishna? Forget everybody else. Just me and Krishna. So I know you're not thinking like that, but you're asking the question. So the consciousness should be, under the direction of and under the authority of the representative of Krishna, I'm approaching Krishna for whatever it is that we do. That's a subset of Krishna consciousness. It's an aspect of Krishna consciousness. We cannot approach Krishna independently. We wouldn't even know of Krishna independently. We'd be in the big darkness of ignorance. Om Ajnana Timirandasya. So therefore, here's a scriptural reference of the same thing. In the chapter 13, text 8 through 12, the items of knowledge, so many. And in the first paragraph of that long purport, Prabhupada explains, of all these different qualities, one is most important. Maichananya yogena bhaktir avyabhicharini. To be fixed in undivided devotion to the personality of Godhead. The others will follow. Other items of knowledge. To get that one quality, acharya upasana. Rupa Goswami says the same thing. The language is different, the same thing. So how do we get to approach Krishna without acharya? It ain't gonna happen, man, as they say. So it requires that connection and conscious connection. It's just subset of being Krishna conscious is mercy through the representatives of Krishna. That's the softness of heart and the humility of heart. Not just, you know, in a ritual behavioristic way, but in a conscious way, you know, the essence way. By the mercy of the spiritual master, I have access to Krishna. You have something? No? Anyone else? Jitendra, you got some words of wisdom for us this morning?
To those who are constantly devoted to me, serve me with love, I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me. So that was probably one of the first verses I read in the Gita that I kind of remember. So things just evolved after that. And then when I looked on the back of the Bhagavad Gita, I noticed, you know, Prabhupada's picture. So I thought, well, you know, maybe I should go try to find this person, you know. And then I came here and they said, well, would you like to meet him? And they said, yeah, he's still alive. And they said, yeah, he'll be here in about 6 weeks. So things kind of worked out for me, but...
stuck around and waited.
Six weeks later.
Things,
you know, the Ratha Yatra was going to take place and stuff like that, so...
Oh.
But I had friends that I, you know, wanted to bring along because they were somewhat interested, but they never took initiation, although they chant and read the books, but they're still kind of sitting on the fence, so...
It's a big fence.
A long, long,
long
time,
big
time,
fence.
Time period. So, you know...
I've got a Bhagavad Gita question for you all. You ready? Don't blurt it out. You got to raise your hand. There's a verse in which it is said that Krishna, Vasudev Krishna, appears in the heart or in the mind of one who has attained the Vasudev state. Doesn't say that exactly. That's not the translation of the verse, but that's the message of the verse. What's the verse? Yes? A little louder, please.
sarvasya cha aham hruti sannivishto mattas pratijnanam.
Well, specifically the word Vasudev is in the verse. The word Vasudev is in the verse. Can you say the verse? Bahunam
Janmanamante
Gyanavan Mam Prapadyate Vasudev Sarvamiti Samahat Vasudurlava. Very good. 719. It's quoted in this purport of 4.3.23 that Prabhupada mentions in this verse's purport. It's Lord Shiva. Because Vasudev appears as the son of Vasudev. Krishna appears where there's goodness, which is essentially what Lord Shiva is saying to Parvati in that reference. Vishuddha Sattvam. He is situated in transcendence, and one's mind to see him must be fixed upon him, and then that purified mind can see him. So next time, if there's a next time for you, somebody asks me or asks you, can you show me God? You can just repeat, Sattvam Vishuddham Vasudeva Shabditam. What? You can see Krishna if you become situated in pure transcendental goodness, no mixture of passion and ignorance. Are you ready? No passion, no ignorance? Then you can see. I can show you. You do that, we'll take care of it. Yes.
Guru Maharaj, I don't have a question, but may I share an appreciation?
Sure. Something from TSI?
No.
Oh.
From Lord Brahma's prayers.
Okay.
The past 3-4 verses, they're all about praying to the Lord.
They're very Krishna conscious.
Yeah. Who cannot be seen. And about 3 purports ago, Prabhupada writes, one doesn't have to see the Lord to be able to pray to Him or serve Him. And it seems like that's pretty much the essence or theme, because Lord Brahma is standing at the milk ocean or shore with all the demigods and no one can see the Lord. They're just praying. And even in this verse, it's the same theme with the previous. You can't be seen, but you can be by this last line, that who is on the upasate yoga rathena, on the chariot of yoga. He's saying you can be seen, or if you reveal yourself, but still you are approachable, although can't see you. Or it's very beautiful the way he's inspiring us to take on devotional service without challenging, can you show me God, which Prabhupada would always talk
about. Yes, it's a challenge. It's not a request.
Yeah.
Well, 2 things in response to what you just said. I was thinking, reading the verse, this yoga ratena, anyone who's heard Prabhupada speak, read the recordings of his lectures, the common one is manoratena. We're riding on the chariot of the mind, so we have to get off that chariot and get on the yoga chariot. And he speaks of that yoga chariot as being mystical. It's a mystical chariot that can carry you to transcendence. But to get on that chariot, then you have to be this dhira, small thing, undisturbed. Even when there's cause for disturbance, remaining undisturbed. Ooh. Too difficult. I'm too disturbed to become undisturbed. I'm too busy being disturbed to become undisturbed. then you've got the mano rata instead of the yoga rata. But it's so that there's a sadhana, there's a cultivation process to become undisturbed. No more passion, no more ignorance. That's rare. To be undisturbed, to be free from ignorance and passion is very rare. But that's the sadhana, and that sadhana is assisted by these wonderful sound vibrations, continuing to redirect our attention to transcendence, to Krishna. Okay. Yeah, Sibal, that's the last little offering here.
Thank you, Ramaraj. Yesterday we were having a discussion when the devotee brought a verse from Maharaj Rishabdev teachings, and the verse says, paraphrasing, I can't remember exactly, but the verse says that in order to come to transcendence, one has to approach and learn from a transcendentalist,
yeah.
And in the verse includes impersonalists.
Yeah, mahat sevam dora mahur vimuktes.
And then, so the question was impersonalists. So we were discussing that impersonalists are also transcendentalists. Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Now, the difference between Mayavadis and Brahmavadis, we're trying to discuss that. Maybe I wanted to ask you to hear from you.
Well, very simply, a Brahmavadi has realization and a Mayavadi doesn't. They have a philosophy, it's a philosophized transcendence, but it's not they're not transcendentally situated. They're offensively situated.
Consider Mayavadis as transcendentalists.
Correct.
Okay.
They're not transcendentalists.
That's the
they're offenders. They're not transcendentalists. We can consider as Brahmavadis two standard examples. One, the four Kumaras. Two, Shukadeva Goswami. And one of the proofs that they're Brahman realized is when they come in touch with the personal feature of the Supreme, voila. Bhaktir Bhavati. And one of the proofs that somebody's not on that platform is they come in contact with the personality of Godhead and they make offenses. So, world of difference between the two. Srila Prabhupada Gita.